if, and it's a real hard if you can disassociate yourself from the Joneses, because the Joneses are effed up in their world more than you have any idea. I think that's the biggest thing. And I think because I was an older parent and my wife is so stable, I said, I don't want to buy into that. And she was like, I'm 100% with you.
Hey everyone, welcome to
Attentive Fatherhood
on the Bleav Podcast Network. I'm Bradley Hasemeyer. Each week, I bring you honest and hilarious conversations with men from all types of backgrounds. But at the end of the day, we all just want to be better dads. Fellas and fathers, how are you? How are you, attempters? Hello, hello. Can you believe it? Oh my gosh, summer is over. It's done. It's gone. The heat isn't over, of course, especially I saw that on the news today, the Southwest is just getting blasted with heat still. I'm here in Georgia, and it's warm, but it's certainly not like the summer. Labor Day has done its thing. It's marked the end, and that can only mean one thing. College football, baby! Yes, of course, NFL as well, but college, that's where my heart is. I don't know about you guys. I'm a big SEC guy. Went to the University of Tennessee. My parents went to Auburn. My grandparents went to Alabama. I was like, it's in my blood. And a lot of big new stuff this year, right? With name, image, likeness, all that stuff. NIL, huh? Huh? Okay. This isn't a sports podcast. Sorry. This is Attempting Fatherhood. And of course, the end of summer also means the beginning of school. How are you guys feeling about that? Did you have any young kids? This was their first year. My daughter's in fourth grade. I have a 2.5-year-old, Loic, and he goes to like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday Mom's Day Out, which by the way, shouldn't just be called Mom's Day Out. A little beef with that. I think it should be Parents Day Out. But you know what? That's neither here nor there. I'll just say that. I'll leave that right there for you. You know, each morning we do a little bit of motivation to try to get Ellis out the door, but she loves being in school, actually. So I love having the schedule. She likes being in school. It's a win-win, and that's nice. I'm really someone who needs that. I don't know if you're that way. Go ahead. You can talk to your phone. You can tell your phone if you are or not. The end of summer, though, we always like to look back on it. How was your summer? What'd you guys do? We did road trips. Ellis had her first sleepaway camp, which was huge for her. I started doing more car coverage, driving different vehicles and covering them on my Instagram at BHAS. Have a whole series called Does It Dad? In fact, where I drive a car, talk about it from a dad's point of view. Great, it's fast, but, you know, fuel economy, cup holders, comfortable seats. You know, can I hand this thing to my kid? Is it too big? Are they too far back? So anyway, I cover it from that perspective. Also, really great news. I'm going to be an ambassador and content creator for the watch brand Citizen. I love these guys. I've had a few of their watches and it comes by me naturally. Like, I love what they do. I love the durability. I love the price point. I love their history. I love that they're Japanese. I love that they're vertically integrated, all this kind of stuff. They're not sponsoring this podcast, so I don't have to get into all the details, but I just wanted you guys to know you're going to be seeing more of that, which is great. Also, want to bring you guys in on kind of what's going on in my dad life. Specifically, things have been a little bit tough with my 2.5-year-old. I'm facing obstacles I never really dealt with Ellis. Not that they were there and I didn't deal with them. It's just Ellis is different, right? You know that. Each of your kids is different. Loic is absolute passion, pure through and through. And he is hysterical. Oh my gosh. I don't laugh harder than when Loic is doing something funny. He's just so hilarious and bizarre and it's awesome. But he's two. And there are certain things, as you may or may not know, that two-year-olds do and they're working on and they're working out. And that can be very frustrating. Additionally, he's very sensitive and impulsive. So we have that coupled with the two-year-old thing, hitting, spitting, etc. And this summer was tough. It was a tough summer. It was hard for me just to like not take offense and not be mad, instantly go to being frustrated or mad, but like take a break, take a breath. I saw something on Instagram where someone was talking about the value of demonstrating to your kids in those moments how to deal with frustration or anger. If you're mad at your kid, instead of just getting mad at them, taking a beat, showing the mature example of that, taking a breath. Okay. All right. Are we ready to deal with this? You know what I mean? So I kind of took that as a good idea. So I'm going to try to implement that kind of moving forward. But there's good news. There is light at the end of the tunnel. He's working so hard at using his words, his gentle hands, I've seen him calm himself down in situations that before he would not. And that's really sweet to see because we know he's trying and he's working hard. And I owe a lot of that to my wife. She's, in fact, reading a book called The Explosive Child. I don't know if you have a child like this or you've either gone through it or you're going through it or whatever. That book has been really helpful just to reframe what's going on inside them, right? Kind of translating their explosiveness into words that we as adults can understand and be like, oh, that makes sense. He's not mad at me. He's trying to communicate and those words aren't lining up for him. So it's frustration and this comes out. So hit me up. Don't hit me. Don't. That's where we're not hitting people. Send me a message on Instagram at Attempting Fatherhood is our Instagram page. You know that. You're already following us, right? Right? Okay, great. Great. All right. On to the show. This week, Chris Meyer. Now, he might be the most interesting guest we've ever had on here. And if you guys have kids in sports at any level, you're going to love later in the chat when he and I dive into that. But here's why he's so interesting. He's an author. His newest book came out this summer called The Book of Moments. You can find that on Amazon. He's also a lawyer, has a master's, is a screenwriter, and yeah, you know what? Just bought a funeral home as a side business. One of the books he wrote is called 4 Months and a Lifetime. And that's not about waiting for his wife to get ready. That is a book about coaching his son's basketball team from kindergarten through the eighth grade, following the same group of guys for those 9 years and getting to witness so much change firsthand. You know, usually if you coach, you kind of coach at one level and the kids grow up and go on. But he just was like, I want to be involved with my kids' lives. So he just started with them and moved all the way up. And all these other kids did as well. So he talks about how important mentors are, not only in that case, but in his own life, as his dad was a very busy businessman and not around very much, and how that involvement from mentors really helped shape his life. My dad was around a good bit, but I can also say that mentors have been very important in my life. I don't know about your experience, but we get into the value of that. Dad's stats. Here we go. He's been married 21 years. He has 3 sons, 18, 16, 13. Woo, he's in the gamut of testosterone right there. And I love talking to dads who have kids down the line from me and from you as well, potentially, because they bring such insight into the future of younger dads or dads like myself who have kids, you know, 9 and 2.5. But okay, enough. Let's find out how Chris Meyer is attempting fatherhood. So I'm just going to jump into it. We got Chris Myers here. Thank you for coming on to Attempting Fatherhood.
Thank you for
having me. Chris Meyer, really singular, not plural. There's not two of you.
Singular.
Just
yeah,
one guy.
Yeah, singular.
And for those who are not watching us on video, which you can watch us on video, but if you're not, you're missing Chris's sweet scarf in Sacramento. Is this just a statement piece or is this necessitated?
No, it's so funny. My wife said, why the scarf? And I said, I don't know. It just kind of segued into spring and it's not quite warm enough yet. So I'm just rocking it for a while.
The scarf is one of those pieces of clothing that is truly the missing link from so many people's wardrobe. And it's so powerful. I can have a scarf.
I get a lot of compliments. I don't know if it's actually sarcasm from most of my friends, but my friend came up to me the other night. We went out and he pulled me aside and he said, I just love the way you rock the scarf all the time.
That does sound almost like
I think he was patronizing.
No one else likes it, but you've got the balls to do it.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is, right? And, or maybe just no care in the world anymore when you listen.
Yeah, just like he looks around, he's like, you did it. You've given up on life, whatever. Haven't you? Congratulations. Yeah. How did you do it? How did you get to the point where you don't care how you look? Tell me how you got there.
My wife will tell you, it's been a long time, but I think you just hit that age and you're like,
this
you
is
know,
it. This is me. I'm not going anywhere else. Yeah, this is the plateau of life. But I think the scarf looks great. And when I lived in New York, we were there a couple years, loved it. We were in Brooklyn. And I get to travel a good bit as a host. And I always bring a scarf because I've had huge jackets and gloves and hats and still been cold. Throw a scarf on. I don't know, man. I'm sure there's science behind it, but when my neck is warm, I can make it happen. That's the turtleneck is in this vein of staying
warm. The turtleneck is there, too.
Do you wear a turtleneck? Do you turtleneck?
You're reading my language. I'm all about the turtleneck.
So good. It's built in. So,
especially a warm one.
Yeah. It's right there already. Yeah. You don't have to bring anything extra.
No, I'm with you. 100%.
The turtleneck is the hooded jacket of the shirt world.
Of yesteryear,
it's like exactly. This is already attached, and if you get hot, just pull it down. You look like a monk. It's great. Yeah. Well, you know what? That's good. That whole conversation was the first thing I wanted to talk about. Glad we got that out of the way. Well, I looked over. So I was sent a press release from your lit agent who said, wow. Hey, check it out. This guy's written some books about dad life, and I think he'd be a good fit for the show. And I looked it over and was like, this guy would be a great fit. So I'm so glad to have met you now in person. And bring me up to speed a little bit on what you've written in terms of what you've been working on, especially your new book. And then we'll get into kind of some dad stats and start talking about dad life and that kind of thing.
That sounds great. Yeah. So I've actually written a total of 5 books, 3 of which have been released. And I'm obviously a self-published guy. The first one was, I told you I was a screenwriter and, you know, the going back to the story, the catalyst was my wife and I got pregnant in Los Angeles with our first son. And when he was born, you know, looking at him as a father for the first time, which I was a little bit later in life, I was around 35. And looking at this little man, I was like, you know, okay, big boy, it's time to wake up. And so that was sort of the catalyst for me. I had put off, I had the, you know, Peter Pan syndrome. I really had taken my time. I went to law school, made a low budget film in New York City, and then loaded it up. And my parents, of course, very proud of me after paying for law school.
Congratulations.
And a master's degree to say, you know, I'm peaced out. I'm going to Los Angeles. So did that. And when I had my son, it, like I told you, it was really this wake up call, this sort of this renaissance in me and saying, okay, it's time to start life, and albeit a little bit later for me. And lo and behold, my wife's family had a mortician who had always been saying, this is a great business, the funeral home industry. And honestly, I'll be honest with you, it really was my best option. I was an attorney. I knew I didn't want to do that because of the hours that I knew I was going to have to commit. And I was so in love with this little boy that I was like, let's go for it. And we got lucky, found a funeral home teetering in bankruptcy, and bought it, turned it around. And again, that was sort of the first starting, the first kind of wake-up call. And the first book came out of that sort of 7-year period when I was meeting with families and starting to hear the same stories over and over again of these surviving, of the surviving members about, I'm going to step back because I think it was my fatherhood and the confluence with my first, you know, this gig in the funeral industry was life-changing because, again, I had a young one. And I was seeing death every day and then hearing these people's stories. And for me, I that was really this massive catalyst because I knew I wanted to be a dad. And these people were all telling me, hey, man, your children are young once. Go get out of here at 5 o'clock every day. Do your thing. Go to everything. And so I really took heed to those messages. And I think it was a very unique situation. Having one son, and then we had our second one while I was here, and then a third one. And I think it was very, very unique because I had this death reminder every day on one side and this budding family on the other. So I thought that was a really cool thing to write a book about, more so to remind people just generally, look it, man, life is short. Take the time, go with your family. And again, it wasn't really me. It was the people telling me. You know,
you were kind of a mouthpiece for all these experiences coming in. You're just flipping it back out.
And the third book was all about my coaching my middle son and his friends basketball from kindergarten to eighth grade. And it was a special, unique group of kids who were all buying into basketball as their true love. And we had a very small parochial school team that then went out and played AAU. And, you know, we started playing bigger tournaments. And we were just a real cohesive unit. But it was really a great dad story. I always tell people, I'm not really much of a coach, but I want to be a good dad.
Oh,
and I want it to be present.
I love that.
Those are sort of the 3 books that have come out.
Well, I think it's also really unique, too, because... you know, a lot of people have experiences in their life that they would say, oh, this is really interesting or whatever, but you're so uniquely positioned to be able to articulate that as a writer and a dad who's being able to express that. It's so funny. There's a lot of overlap there. We were both talking about being in LA. Also, one of my good friends His family owns funeral homes, and he and his brother have taken over the business. Rose Mortuary, shout out to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville. Yeah.
And then also along those same lines of like feeling like an outsider in the LA bubble from just like, man, it's just so hard to crack that, to get in there, even with reps, even with time, even with whatever.
Right.
And so that can feel so deflating. And then also kind of looking at where your life is now. Okay, I have kids. Like the reality is, you know, LA is always going to be there. Hollywood's always going to be there. My kids won't. So there has to be some kind of pivot in that. And then I love the concept of like sticking with these guys for so long, because it's the same. It was the same guys. It wasn't just like you were like coaching this team and like people would come and go and you move here. That's amazing. The longevity of that you would have seen and to come together. I mean, that as a screenwriter, you got to be thinking you're going to adapt that, because that's like such a great, you know, Hoosiers meets like there was a...
The White Shadow.
Yeah, ooh, remember? Yeah.
Remember the White Shadow? Yeah. So that's exactly, I mean, obviously I would love all of these to become adapted. Certainly two of them are very cinematic in there. But you're exactly right. It was so unique because typically a coach will see the same grade over and over again or the same age group, right? But I know I'm not a coach, and I just wanted to be with my son and his friends. And we had a couple dads who were similar. And then, you know, everyone has responsibilities that they fade off. But this one unique core, about seven boys, really went through this school together. And it's just such... You know, again, they don't think it's so cool right. yet, but I know 10 years from now, they're going to look back and read it and go, oh my
Hugely.
God, this is awesome. Yes. Can you imagine? Because I know I felt that way, and I felt that way. My father was not that guy. My father was a businessman. He was unapologetic about it. But I tell you this, I never had any kind of animosity for that, because I could see the joy in my father's face when he would talk about work and what that did for him. And I had men in my life, in my small town of Pleasantville, New York, if you can believe that, that took the time and were, you know, would change in the car and then come out and show us fundamentals of the game for a couple hours a week. And I just knew inherently how to respect those people, right? Because I could see them. I could see them, you know, changing into the t-shirt quickly and coming out and just hammering with us. And I had such a great experience with a couple of guys, fathers, again, of younger kids or older kids my age, that just took the time. And I just knew to respect them. And again, looking back at it, when I went away to college, I actively sought out those men to go back and knock on their door and say, hey, man, I just want to say thank you. You know, I appreciated what you did. And I know what it meant to them, the world that it meant to them. They told me to my face, you know, just think about it, man. You just came back out of the blue.
Wow. And said, made their
you.
Year.
I can't tell you how much that means to me.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? So I hope I'm one of those dads eventually, you know, I think I will be. And I just loved it.
I love it.
It was,
that's so funny. Well, one of the questions I like to ask my dad, you kind of alluded to it a little bit, was kind of like in growing up, what was it from your kind of origin, you know, family origin that dad did that you loved, that you're like, you know, I'm doing that part in my family, in my parenting. And then something that you're kind of leaving out. It sounds like your dad was really busy and wasn't able to be involved.
Yeah.
But what is something maybe that you were like totally on fire about? Like, that's such a cool thing.
Yeah, so he was busy. You know, he was definitely a worker. He did his thing. But what I really loved is that, you know, there was always a time that, you know, Friday afternoon, we'd all get in the car, we'd drive up to Vermont, and we would ski on the weekends. And that was his love and my mom's love. And he always made time for that. And we always had special, whether it was holidays, you know, weekends, all that. He carved out time for us. We knew he was present. He would come to a game that was special. It's not like he was, you know, a stay away father. But I think the greatest thing is I saw the joy that he had for his vocation. And I think that was profound for me, even as a young man, to understand that and, you know, strive for that, right? I want to feel that way. You know, you could see it in my dad, and I admired that greatly. And I think the only thing I would really leave out is he traveled some. I'm not a traveler.
I consciously made that decision early on that that is not a vocation that I would choose for me. Just it just wasn't part of my makeup. And I was I wanted to be there for the children. And my kid's school is down the street. Yeah. And I'm at everything, probably a little bit annoying on campus.
Here comes Chris again.
Exactly. Geez. In his shorts and his ripped
with t-shirts. His scarf. He's playing ball in a scarf. I don't get it.
With that damn
he's
scarf.
Done it.
No. But that was it. You know, I think those things. I have a great relationship with my parents. Luckily, God bless them. They're 82 years old and very healthy. And have a great relationship now with both.
Do you feel like you've kind of gotten to that as far as joy in your occupation? Because screenwriting is hard. I mean, that is like, it is hard to find joy out, you know, depending on how you define it. Just much like an actor or a host, it's like, you know, sometimes it's like, I just want to be credited and have an opportunity and like sell this thing or act in this thing. So that can be tough.
Yeah. I definitely felt that way when I was in LA. I was dying to be credited, like you say, and be validated, so to speak, by a greater cosmos than my agent or my manager. But once I got out of that, when I went into the funeral business, I had no intention of writing books. I had no, I put writing away for eight
wow.
years.
In terms of your kids, you know, coming from your dad, was there a, like, even as a kid, you were like, I can't wait to be a dad. I know you said you waited to like 35. There's kind of the Peter Pan thing. Or, you know, was it like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Dad life is so great. I'm so glad. Or I've always waited for this. How did that relate to you?
I think I knew I would always want to be a dad. And I always knew that it would be fun and I would be very active. But at the same time, there was a scary part about it. And I think a scary part about marriage. Mm. And again, then being in Los Angeles and, you know, you've been there a little bit. There's a lot of beauty and a lot of surface stuff and a very difficult, like you said, very difficult time getting in. The rejection and the telling you wrong and who do you listen to? There was a ton of that. So I think all of that played in it for me to kind of push it off. And then, at some point you're like, you know, my God,
I don't want to be a 50-year-old diapering a baby.
Right, yeah. Right. I knew that wasn't attractive. I saw plenty of that in Los Angeles.
Yes. I was going to say 35 is actually attractive. A young dad in LA. That is retirement age in Tennessee where I grew up. What were your fears? You're talking about kind of fears, just like,
I think the fears are always settling
money down.
Okay. Yeah, settling down, money. How are you going to make money? How am I going to afford this? What am I going to do? Am I going to really like that?
Yeah, 100%.
And then it's funny because I have a nephew who works with us and he's going through it right now. And he's just like, how am I going to afford a house and raise a child? And I'm like,
how old is he?
I know. I've been there. And we all feel that way. And you know what? It ends up working out. But you got to take that first step, right? Mm. You can't just sit there and wallow in it. You got to take that first step. And, you know, what is that great Christmas claymation one, put one foot in front of the other? It's so simple, right? It's so simple, but you got to get out of the rut by taking that step, right? And I think that's, as a young man or an early father, those are all good pieces of advice. Just take that step. It's not always going to be the right one, but you're going to pivot, like you said earlier, from that. You'll learn. You're going to fail. There's going to be plenty of failure.
100%.
I love failure. I tell my kids that all the time. Fail because you're trying.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? And then you'll figure it out, right? We all do.
Yeah, I like that. From the basketball days, are there any great stories of dad life there? You know, one dad I spoke with, he talked about taking his kids to the skate park, and he was like, I wanted to make sure I was that guy driving the car because I would hear the kids talking in the background. I could hear my kids' friends, how they related to each other, what was going on in their lives. They weren't telling me, but simply because I was present in that, I got to learn and glean and be part of inside jokes and stuff like that. But I feel like must have that.
He hit it on the head. For me, it's being present, right? And my wife and I have always said, look,
we want to be that house. And so we have a pantry that you, it looks like a Costco, a business Costco when you walk in, and a refrigerator filled with drinks that, you know, kids' parents don't usually let them have. And I say to her, that is the best expense we could ever do to be comfortable, to let them walk in. And you should see kids in my house. They just roll into my pantry.
Tossing their shoes off. Hey, coach, they're already on the couch. Right. Yeah.
Right, right. So I love that because I remember in my childhood having those houses and you just gravitated toward them, right? And they were, you hear so much. And I think there also becomes in coaching, you know, after a while, the kids, they treat you like, you know, another dad. Right. And it's like, hey, coach, what's up? And, you know, they talk, they're more relaxed. And I love that. And you hear so much. But also it's a level of comfort for them. And I want the children to be comfortable. Mm. I want them to have that. If they had a problem, I think they would come to me. And I think as, you know, I have a 18-year-old, I have a 15-year-old, almost 16, and a 12-year-old. And I think all of their friends feel that way. I think they would. Certainly not, maybe not now, but I know in 5 to 10 years, they know my door is always open. And I want that. I really want that. Because it's great to have a mentor or a friend who is not your
parent. Oh,
you
totally.
Know that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, you know, sometimes there's a safer, the coach might be a little bit safer to talk to about.
Yeah.
That.
Even
I felt that way with teachers.
Oh, also. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. At college, right? I had a couple teachers that were just totally chill and opened their office to me. And, you know, you could talk about stuff that wasn't, you know, History 404. And I appreciated that.
Do you ever get pushback from other parents that are insulted? Like, well, why wouldn't he tell me that? I mean, that, I mean, I think, you know, even if you're a great parent, you're doing your thing, there's still that relationship.
Yeah. Right. Right. And yes, the answer is yes. But also the answer is, you know, out here in California, I'm sure it's very similar in a lot of parts of the country. Things have gotten so exponentially competitive, and the grades in which that competition has happened is lower and lower. You know, I start to see in sort of sixth, seventh grade, kids splintering off. They're not as excited about the idea of team. I'm an old school, you know, bounce pass, layup, Hoosiers kind of guy. And now they're like, well, we got to play in high school, coach. So we're playing over on this team and four other teams. And it starts to become...
It's very individual.
The idea, it becomes more individual. And that's very, you know, as a guy like me, who's an old softy, who all he cares about is the team from kindergarten on, to see that, I know it's coming, but it's really difficult. That's hard to see for
me. That's fascinating.
And I'm experiencing it. Yeah. Experiencing it a lot more and more. And, you know, people, individual shooting coaches and hitting coaches and you know, foul shooting coaches. And oh my God, after a while,
this is a whole new
world
for me.
What a whole industry.
Yeah. Oh, because my son is two, he's adopted. He's two and I think he's napping. He was fighting it pretty hard for almost an hour. He has little conference calls that it's more of a monologue. He just, everything that happened that day, he's remembering. It's a journaling time. But anyway, and then I have an almost 9-year-old daughter who loves to be active, but was never really a sports person. She's following in her mother's footsteps of singing and theater. And then she'll go hiking with me and stuff like that. But softball, soccer, none of that was really on our radar, though I grew up playing sports. So what you're talking about is this kind of new evolution that a lot of our listeners have kids who are in the similar ballpark as you. And I've got friends who have kids in high school and stuff. But this is a whole new world for me. So that's interesting you're bringing all this up.
Yeah, it is interesting. And again, it's a real tough buy-in, especially with the kids who are, you know, the better of the athletes, the extreme good athletes. I have a core that is my role players who will buy in forever. But it's usually the kids that can excel. They start to say, you know, peace out, you know, and they're playing three different sports at the same time. But, you know, again, I joke in the book, I have rec league kids because they had a rec league father, right? I wasn't a supreme athlete, so I enjoyed it. I loved it. I craved it. I craved the competition, but I never was a D1 athlete. And I knew
and
that.
Did you and your wife kind of go into, because a lot of my friends also who have kids who play sports have to be really proactive about saying, okay, we're doing one sport this year, or we're doing two, or is it just like fire hose? Whatever you can get into, let's do it. How did you approach that with them and then with your wife as well?
We've always had seasonally. There is some tension in our household about what they should and should okay. not do. Because she's really, you know, I contribute when I can, but she's really she calls it a bus driver. She's like, Chris, if you only saw where I go all day.
You're like, I see an empty fuel tank. That's what I see. Yeah.
It's maddening. Oh, so I think we try to limit it in our household. We're not in traveling teams. This is another phenomenon, people going to Las Vegas from Sacramento. Yes.
I know
Los
a little
Angeles.
Bit of that from baseball in high school. There was a travel teams that these guys would play on, and it was next level. My parents were like, don't even think about that.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're at. And we said, you know, we'll go 20 minutes up the road, play AAU, but I don't want to go to Oregon for the weekend and, you know, leave my other family home and go with, you know, it's just too
it's
much.
Hard.
You have to draw.
I imagine that's a tough thing as a parent because you want to see your kids succeed. You want to enable that success, but then also brings up the question of how do you define success? Because are we talking success is simply strictly sports, or is it emotional IQ, or, you know, like how do you figure that out? So this is all I'm looking into my future here. So I'm trying to figure this out.
Yeah, no, it is. And you should, because it's, you know, the famous thing that we all know is keeping up with the Joneses, right? And I think once, especially when you're in suburbia, it's like, well, Jimmy's doing it, so why shouldn't we do it? And I think and it's a real hard if you can disassociate yourself from the Joneses, because the Joneses are effed up in their world more than you have any idea.
Oh, that's such good truth.
I think that's the biggest thing. And I think because I was an older parent and my wife is so stable, I said, I don't want to buy into that. And she was like, I'm 100% with you. And we stayed recreation. Competitive, but not crazy. Yep. And I think that was good for our family. Now, again, I see tons of other families and it works. Yep. I can tell you 1,001 stories of heartbreak where I know the kid was a rock star. I played soccer against him. He was in our class. He dropped like 10 goals on us. And my son was a really good soccer player and he would be going everywhere. This is like in third grade. As God is my witness, by fifth grade, his father was calling me and say, can he play on the rec team with you? Because he's just fried. He doesn't want to do it anymore. And I'm like, of course you want Messi on my rec team. Bring him. Let's go. Does he have a couple of friends?
Yeah, that's so funny.
but there are stories like that. And again, look, there's tons of success stories, I'm sure. But those ones have more resonance with me because I'm like,
you're on the front lines with it.
You played soccer at Berkeley, but maybe your kid won't.
Yeah, you know? And then what was all that for? And if there is value in it, if you can find the value in it, then great. I mean, we kind of talk about this, my wife and I, in terms of art or writing or, you know, shooting videos, this kind of stuff. You know, if the tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, if the art is created and no one applauds it, do you still find value in it? And I think, you know, if you're traveling around and whatever, and you're utilizing that as a way, who knows, like, let's go see some historical sites and let's get closer as a family. But if it's because the pressure is on, like, hey kid, here's more pressure on your shoulders, that can be like a success nightmare.
So again, I think it's profound what you just said, because it resonates with me, because I had a book club, believe it or not, come to the funeral home and talk about one of my books, right? And one of the women, she stood up and she said, Chris, tell me, be honest with me, is this a lucrative deal? And I said, are you freaking kidding me? I'm losing money every time I write a book, but that's not why I do it. And I got to be honest with you, I could not have said that as a 37, 35-year-old screenwriter. And now, you know, in my 50s, I'm writing because I'm going to leave a legacy. Mm. These books are going to be for my boys when they feel like reading them. They still haven't read them. But I know there's goodness in those books, and they're going to read them and they're going to know how much their father loved them. And that is why I'm doing it. And that is why I write. So when you say, if I create the art and it falls in the forest, does anyone hear it? That for me is it. I'm doing it for me. I'm not a golfer. Yep. So this is my golf. I write books and it's fun as hell. And I write what I want, when I want. No one's telling me, hey, Life in 20 Lessons was awesome. Can you write more Life in 20 Lessons? Well, no, I don't want to write that. You know?
There's 20. That's all there is. There's only 20.
Well, it's funny. I read a review on Amazon. The lady goes, it's called Life in 20 Lessons. He probably should have stopped at 10, but I gave it 5 stars. You're asking me why did I give it 5 stars? Because the first 10 were so damn good. And I was raise the
part
room.
Part 1, part 2. And now it's a series. Right, there we go.
Right.
Oh man. Yeah.
That's what you'd get at a traditional publisher.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. That's cool. Now, do you have any fun stories from coaching your son and these kids? Anything that's just like when you think about that, like, oh my gosh, this one time such and such happened.
Well, you know what it is? I mean, I'll give it a blanket thing. Fathers cheat. They just cheat. They're a bunch of competitive cheaters.
And that's so good.
I think it's hilarious to witness. You know, I remember being in an AAU tournament, as crazy as this sounds, when we're like fourth graders. And, we were eight kids from a little parochial school, all in the same class. And, we would go up there and we would work people, right? Because we were just, they just followed everything to a T. And after a while, you started getting a reputation. So we would play these kids from, tougher places, cities and stuff like that. And they would bring girls, but they were like eighth grade girls. And they would have them on the team. And these Here's girls were like dropping 20, 25 yeah, on us.
It looks like the year's been scratched out here, sir. Yeah, no, that's fine.
Like the girl had more of a mustache than my kids, And I was like, what are we doing, guys? And he's like, oh, man, I just needed to complete a team. And I'm like, you got four kids on the bench there. Why does the girl have to play?
That is so funny.
Stuff like, I mean, stories like that are rampant.
I think that happens too when, and this is a conscious thing as a parent, disassociating how you're perceived, your own success, your own whatever, from what your kids have done. You know, like growing up, it was, you're a Hazemeyer, and when you leave this house, you're a Hazemeyer, and you will be respectful. And yes, there's value in that. But when you push that further, if the kid gets in trouble, the parent feels like I'm in trouble, instead of that being like, oh, if you failed, I'm a failure. And that's tough.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest with you. I'm as guilty as the next guy. I'm way too competitive. I'm the guy I'm a loud mouth on the sidelines. I'm chirping. You know, I may or may not have gotten a T once in a while. But it's very difficult. You're exactly right, because especially if you've played sports in your life, you know, this is a little tinge of the glory days still, right? Yeah, I am the coach of these guys. So I am not perfect. I want to be very clear about that. I think there is a lot of blurring of the lines. And it's very, very difficult especially if you have played in the past and you have that competitive nature. I bring that same nature to business. I'm like that in business too. And I don't think it's great all the time. And I recognize that. And I think I've mellowed over the years. You know, my 18-year-old will tell stories of me that my 12-year-old's like, whoa, boy.
Didn't know that. Yeah, that there's been some growth in those years, hopefully. Yeah.
Let's hope. I think a little bit. Some people might argue a little less, but we strive for that.
That's funny. Is there any thought of like kids going into the family business? Is this a 6 feet under type of situation?
I think it will be, it is a solid business and it will be here, in perpetuity. And if they would choose that, but again, my father was so great about this, and my mom too. I have an amazing mother, to kind of go find your joy and to kind of, not steer. I think education in our family was a big deal, because I come from both sets of grandparents being immigrants coming over on a boat to America from Germany. And so I think
education was hammered in our household because my grandparents were not educated. And my mom went to like a 2-year business college. So it was ingrained in them, like, oh, if you get them educated. And it's funny because now, again, in my 50s, I don't think much of education. I don't think much of formal education. And I know that might be a little bit controversial, but I'm of the Gary Vee school. Yep. I want people who have lived a little, who have, you know, who find what they want to do and start early. Because college, I mean, I don't know what your experience was like, but mine was a hell of a lot of, you know, light beer and beer bongs, you know.
Yep.
And I don't, you know, I'm just not a big formal education
this
guy.
And this is a
although I have tons
yeah
of it,
this is a conversation, you know, that comes up quite a bit with my friends who have older kids, because I'm from the South. So, you know, by the time I was getting married at 30, people thought it was my retirement party, not my wedding. And so, you know, they had already had plenty of kids and done their thing. And we talk about this with my daughter and my son as well, just the value of that, you know, element of education. And certainly, right, there's I don't think there is the answer. I think there's different schools of thought. And I think that at least it's good that we're asking the questions.
I think it's huge that we're asking the question. And I think we're at least, you know, you probably know with all of your children how different they are, right? That's the other thing about parenting. You that to me is probably the greatest nugget to leave dads, is to say, dude, first of all, the minute you think you have it figured out, there'll be a right turn coming up tomorrow. And then every child is so unique, at least mine are so different, that I find myself parenting differently, right? That's the other thing. You have to be this malleable creature to be like, I can push this button on this guy, but not here. Don't do it here. You know, that's the other great thing. They're all so unique. So I think also education-wise, I just don't want to see people getting in debt. Like I'm not about that. I don't think there's any piece of paper at the end of the golden rainbow that you can walk across the stage that they can give you that is worth, you know, $300,000 in debt. I'm not seeing that.
I just don't.
And again, I'm a hyper-educated, you know, master's, law degree, you know, I got
it that's
all.
True.
And maybe that gives me the comfort, but if I could echo anything backwards, it would be like, don't freaking do it.
You know? Yourself, you would say that?
Well, and I say that again, and now I'm smacking myself, because my legal education definitely gave me street cred in my own brain to know that when someone's jacking with me or someone, you know, so I think there was value there. I kind of ultimately knew that I didn't want to be an attorney because I didn't want to be in the middle of someone's mess all the time. I have my own mess, which is great. So there is value. I do see that. Yes. But it's the debt that
it's crazy.
I can't see
it's crazy. I totally agree. And I think there's, you know, I think at least opening the conversation of maybe for one child, but not the other child, or maybe, you know, maybe it's a 2-year, you know, kind of thing. When I lived in Australia for a semester, I did a semester abroad. And when I was there, I realized, you know, I was fairly sheltered just from the standpoint of like, you know, fairly, you know, awesome childhood, Knoxville, Tennessee, you know, mostly surrounded by people that look like me and all this. I had no real kind of global perspective, and moved to Australia for a semester. And, you know, people are talking about gap years and studying, you know, they're going to go hike for a year in Europe. And I'm like, why would you do that? You're wasting time. You could write to your degree. Some people are like, oh yeah, I'm not in a vocation. I'm taking vocational track. And I'm like, that sounds like a sellout. Like, oh, I'm sorry to hear about your life being so hard that you have to go study vocational. Because all of that was pumped into me. That had to be a 4-year degree. It had to be this way. And then when you realize it doesn't, you're like, whoa, hold up. Maybe that is your answer, but at least look around.
I think that's, again, keeping up with the Joneses. We're all told. You said it. You just said the magic word to me. And I know it because it was in my brain. What? You're going to take a gap year? You can't waste that year. Think about the ridiculousness of that
year.
Statement.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're 21 years old, you don't want to waste that year. What better time to waste a year
than 21
years old, right? I mean,
looking back on it, you're like, shit, are you kidding
me? That's the best time to do it.
That's the best time to waste a year.
Yes, don't do it at 30 when you just had kids. You can't take a gap year then. Hey.
Although we'd like to. I'm at 50 plus and I'm like, can I get a gap year?
It's for my own upbringing, guys.
Just my well-being.
I promise you it's going to work out. I'm going to go to Europe.
I want to step off the habit
for
trail.
For a year.
Let me have a year. I can be better. I know it.
I'll just take 2 nights at a Holiday Inn down the street, actually. would work out at this point. I don't need a gap year.
I love it.
That's such an interesting interesting thing. And that's part of why I love this podcast, which is this opportunity to, I love that you said, kind of like yell backwards. I get to look forwards and I get to yell backwards and I get to usher people like yourself into the conversation to speak to these dads who are all over the place.
Right. And they need to know that. They need to know. Look, there's tons of books out there about how to be the dad or do this or that. But you have to, it's insane. It really is insanity to be a dad. The lack of sleep, the stuff coming at you, trying to keep a profession alive, trying to keep a marriage alive.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much. And to some extent, you really just gotta, you know, like the horses in Central Park, you just gotta put those things on and just keep moving forward, right? Just put that foot in front because that too will be over. But then here's the crazier thing. When it's over, you're like, shit, I missed the, you know, this stage, and I missed when he vomited in my face and we laughed, and you know,
people say that, and I do my best to believe it and my best to try to,
I know you
to,
don't
to,
right now.
To savor these moments of like, you know, my son is my, I tell people, He punches as hard as he hugs. He is an absolute passionate, emotional man, and I love everything about it. And when he throws something across the room, I'm like, there will be a day. I'm told there will be a day when I miss this. This is not that day. But I'm trying my best to stay in that.
Yeah, or when he's wide awake at 3:30 and you're like, I have it.
Exactly. So that's really powerful. I love that. And, you know, I think it's one of those things, too, where you know, I've been able to have dads, you know, kind of confess to me that they felt like they were alone. I was alone in my struggle with this. I was alone in feeling like I'm a bad dad. I was alone in feeling that, you know, that I've messed up my kids, or I'm not involved enough, or I'm too involved. And so that's part of the whole point of this too, which is just to say, like, you're not alone. And you reference the dad books, and I'm not going to read that dad book. I don't care what it is. And most of the other dads I speak with are like, I just want to get in it and let's see how it goes. And so,
So I think your podcast and podcasts like yours are a massive value because you can flip it on and you can hear guys like you and me who have been through it or are going through it. And I think that has even more value than a book because it's real people and you can hear their voices. And you said a very telling thing to me that is personal to me. You said, I feel alone. And I think there is, that is a very natural feeling to feel alone. I think there is a lot of anxiety. You know, the mental health aspect of being a father is very difficult. And it is really, really important to have a friend, a confidant, a mother, a father. For me, I'm totally blessed. I have a best friend from law school, who was being a parent when I was being a parent. And it's not normal. I understand that, but we talk probably 5 times a week, multiple times a day at times. He's in Maine and I'm here. But for me to have him, I always tell him, and I tell him to his face, you know, obviously how much I love him, but that our friendship has given me the ability to not have to go to a therapist, because I think therapists are great. There's no stigma anymore with going to anyone to talk to. Please, everyone realize that. That is the most important thing. For me, I got lucky that my friend was my therapist. And I to him also, so there's that two-way street. But I know if any time I was down, and I was down a lot, that I could pick up the phone call and talk to him and things got better. And if you can have that in your life, I think it's important. And again, it doesn't have to be a friend. It could be, you know, your wife. It could be your mom, dad. For me, it would work good that he was somewhat objective, but yet still in the Chris Meyer camp of, you know, party on. You know, I had the respect of a lot of my friends who were 9-to-5 guys because I was doing what I loved in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like, you're going to do it, man. You're going to do it. I believe in you. Keep at it. You're going to sell something, you know? And I that to me was everything because, you know, when you're, it's Thursday afternoon at 2:00 and you feel like crap, and to pick up the phone and him to say, dude, just put the grind on, put it down and keep going. You know, that meant everything to me.
I think that's huge.
Yeah, you can't be alone.
No, that's huge. And that's, you know, usually as I wrap up, I ask my dads for some dad advice and you just preempted it. Just boom, there it was.
Yeah.
Because that's so powerful. Community. You have to have it. If it's one person or if it's a group or if it's this podcast or, you know, whatever, find that group. And you have to be proactive.
I think better than the singular person is community, like you talked about. That's a great word because it's really a word from yesteryear when it really meant something. Back in our day, or at least in my day, growing up in a small town, there was a sense of community, right? We did ride our bikes in the July 4th parade, right? And we did play dad's club and rec leagues, and we had summer picnics, and we went to church for the ice cream socials. There is that sense of community. And there are times when I look back, especially on my childhood and my church, I went to church every Sunday. You know what? That was one of the most powerful things in retrospect.
Of course,
I hated it doing that. But the sense of community that it gave me, different from my school and different from my friends, life-changing.
Irreplaceable.
Irreplaceable.
Yeah, I love that.
Irreplaceable. Yeah.
Well, Chris, you are irreplaceable. Thank you for coming on here. Thank you for attempting fatherhood.
Yeah. Wow. And it's an attempt.
Dude, you're doing it.
Growing every day, learning every day, guys. Keep at it.
I love that. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Attempting Fatherhood. My whole hope with this is that we build a community that encourages dads and that brings new information to the table and gets you excited about living your life, doing what you're doing. If you have felt that way, please make sure you rate us on Spotify, on Apple. Just rate us, give us some stars, hopefully 5, and make sure you share this. That's equally important. It's a great way to build community, to share this information with other dads, you know, start a text chain, whatever. That helps us, that helps you. We grow this community and all that. Thanks again for listening. Make sure you're following us on Instagram @AttemptingFatherhood. Again, thank you so much and have a great day.